Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, and welcome once again to another exciting episode of Mad Scientists Exposed. And I know there's a lot of really evil mad scientists out there, but, you know, I thought today we'd talk about something a little more fun just because, you know, just reading all the horrors about the vaccine industry out there right now is just really super depressing. And, you know, all you got to do is step into Facebook and find all the grieving parents and the arguments and the links to articles where, you know, the quote-unquote scientists are talking down to you and all that. And you know, of course, California's SB 277 went into effect this week. And so, you know, parents are fighting back. Students are being turned away from school, but, you know, one poor mother wrote into one of these groups on Facebook, one of these parents groups, well, you know, my kid was already vaccine injured and he's autistic now. And actually my sister has custody of him and the school forced the vaccination on him. And so now he's just been vaccinated again. And now his sister is, displaying symptoms of, the coughing and the rash, and they must have given him DTaP and MMR, I don't know. And you know, what do you say to something like that? All I could say was, you know, I'm really, really, you know, sorry about this, and I hope if your kids live through this, that you consider moving out of state next year. So I don't know. They didn't go over too well. She ended up, you know, a lot of people were telling her, how could you let this happen? And anyway, it was just, it's so, so sad. Anyway, so we just started a discussion there on, how to encourage moms to be fighting mama bears, because if you don't fight back, the system will eat you alive. Anyway, so that is particularly depressing to me, and I wanted to do something. This happens week after week, and I just wanted to do something fun this week. To me, I think it's fun. Some people take it super seriously, you know, UFOs and all that. So, but I have I've lined up some things that we can talk about with, you know, NASA, manned and unmanned space exploration, UFOs. And I really think that NASA knows more than they're telling us. I didn't used to think that because I know people that work at NASA. I used to work at an observatory, and some of my coworkers were NASA employees. You know, their paychecks actually said NASA on them instead. And, you know, but we were, you know, I was in the solar astronomy department where we took measurements of the sun. And, you know, that was fascinating to, you know, get a handle on the rotation of the sun. You know, the sun doesn't rotate evenly. You know, the equator rotates faster than the poles. And so when you make a chart of it, it comes out in a curve, you know, with the equator region going faster than the poles. And then, you know, of course, the sun has its solar maximum cycles and solar minimum cycles, you know, the number of sunspots, and that's all related to the magnetic field of the sun. And I'm sorry, I hope you didn't hear that blip. Anyway, the sun, it has a cycle of about 11 years, but behind that is a 22-year cycle of the sun flipping its magnetic poles. And it does it gradually, slowly. It takes like 22 years to do it. But the north magnetic pole becomes the south magnetic pole, and the south magnetic pole becomes the north magnetic pole. And when you're looking at solar magnetogram images, which you can, you know, get off of NASA websites and National Optical Astronomy Observatory websites, or the National Solar Observatory.edu, you know, you see this progression of the solar spots as they rotate, the magnetic fields, which are underneath the solar spots, you know, as they rotate around the sun. One of these science channels I love to watch on YouTube is called BP Earth Watch, and he watches, solar view from the Earth's perspective, and then what he calls stereo A on the opposite side of the sun. So we get a back view of the sun while we're looking at the front view from our side. And you can watch the sunspots rotate all the way around the sun. And another YouTube channel that I like to watch is called Secure Team 10. And he is he calls himself a UFO researcher. And there are a lot of UFO researcher channels on YouTube. This guy seems the most credible. I've seen some there that, you know, play us for stupid. They'll float different shaped Mylar balloons up, in the sky over their house, and then, video it and tell us it's a UFO. And, you know, some of it's just ridiculous. Oh, that's an ice cream truck. That's not a, you know, a Mylar balloon. That's not a real UFO. But this other guy, Secure Team 10, he's been looking at stereo A rather, and you know, some of the same pictures that Meet the Earth Watch is looking at. But you know, and he has a lot of people email in their own observations, because you can't, no human being can possibly stay awake 24 hours and watch all this stuff, you know, all these feeds from the science centers. But there are people that are identifying things that are just hovering near the sun, near the edges. And, you know, this is data coming from these science satellites, you know, little point objects, you know, little tiny, you know, because from the distance from here, it's certainly a long distance, and little triangular objects. And then they'll see some of these things kind of buzzing around, maybe another planet, you know, maybe a moon of Saturn or something. And there just seems to be activity out there that we didn't put there. And, you know, we had really good news, I think it was yesterday, Stereo B had been lost in space. It had, you know, positioned itself kind of like to make a big Y with the sun in the middle, solar A and B on the backsides of the sun, you know, separated by a certain distance, and then the Earth at the bottom of the Y. So we would have this three-way view of the sun. And Stereo B had been lost for about a year. It had just lost communication with its controllers on Earth, and it suddenly, like, reappeared, announced itself, remade contact. So now this mission, now we'll get that extra data that we weren't getting before, and so that'll make for some nice observations. Anyway, so that's right. I like to watch some of this UFO stuff. And, you know, some of the things that I see on Secure Team 10, they really could be weather balloons, but other things are not. Like this morning, he showed a image of a chemtrail that was dissipating, and this little light that appeared in the middle of the chemtrail, it was in the daytime sky, and it kind of like drifted around, changing directions a few times, and then it kind of like drifted away. And you know, certainly it's an unidentified flying object. It's unidentified, but in this case, on this one, I think it was man-made, because it just kind of looked like maybe they released a balloon at the same time as the chemtrail to trace the wind currents. Because sometimes when you see chemtrails, they put an X up in the sky, and then I know it's weather people tracing with it, because I've read some articles about that, where they'll trace an X as it crosses the ocean and see how it accumulates, water to it. And this particularly happened after 9/11. There were no planes in the sky, so they put an X over the Pentagon, and I saw it as I drove to work that day. I was living there at the time, and it was creepy because there was no other planes in the sky, and then there's just one big X over the Pentagon. I'm like, what is that? You know, well, later on, a science article came out talking about the weather progression, that it actually developed into a rain front that hit England with quite a big storm as it drifted across the ocean. So that was kind of interesting. But I could see where this thing that Secure Team 10 put out this morning, part of his thing might have been some kind of a weather balloon that they released at the same time as a chemtrail. That might have been what they were viewing, and I think that was his video of UFOs over Chicago. He's also got some other unexplained stuff happening over Turkey and I want to say Czechoslovakia, but I'm not sure that's a country anymore. The Czech Republic, that's, you know, and like there'll be a big thunderstorm, and there'll be a red glow just sitting in the middle of a thunderstorm. You know, just a singular globular red glow, or a globular blue glow. In Turkey, it was a red glow, and in fact, the mayor of, I think it's Ankara is the name of the city there, he's launched an investigation, and the one sitting over Prague in the Czech Republic was blue, and I don't know if any official people are launching investigations over there to see what those are. But another element of this video this morning was pictures from Apollo 10, which was the last non-landing moon mission that we sent up there before Apollo 11. And, of course, they sent up the astronauts with large format cameras. They were film cameras, still the quality is quite good, and some of these pictures are higher. Most of these pictures are high resolution on the NASA website, and he's got links to his sources when he puts these up. The Secure Team 10 does, the YouTube guy. But the one that he showed today, the first one, you couldn't really tell, it was so blurry and it was so close to the surface. It looked like some kind of an aircraft, maybe without wings, but it was an oblong thing that was didn't look like it was a natural object, and it was casting a shadow on the ground. Then the next frame you see it is it's off the ground, and the shadow is separated from it, and it looks almost like a different model of the shuttle. Well, back in 1968 and 69, we didn't have the shuttle. The shuttle came out, when did it come out? About 79 or 80. And so, things are going on, and on the far side of the moon, who can watch from the Earth unless we have something back there observing, like when we sent the Apollo 10 around. So there's, scientists that have been speculating, maybe Roswell, maybe we really did capture some technology at the time. This might be a secret science program of actual human beings on the moon. And then why do we go in 69 with rocket technology versus, I guess, supposedly it's magnetic technology or gravitational manipulation technology? Why would we have two different space programs? So, but there are people who theorize that. And then there are people who theorize, well, no, maybe these are actually aliens, from another planet. And I know all the time they're announcing more and more what they call Earth-like planets, which they could be larger or smaller, but they're in what's called the Goldilocks zone around their star. They have the right type of star, and they're at the right distance from their star so that they have all the water cycles, water vapor, liquid, and frozen, and they've, got atmospheres and stuff. And, of course, they'll have to have magnetic fields to keep their atmospheres anchored. I mean, it's kind of why Mars's atmosphere is so thin. It's related to the loss of its magnetic core. Like, it totally frozen, so it's not generating a magnetogram, magnetosphere, and all that stuff. So maybe I'm wandering too far, but there's been quite a few of these planets announced, the 1,100 light years away, 1,200 light years away, a couple million, whatever. But one came out, there was a leak from an ESO scientist saying that there's been an extremely Earth-like planet found only 4 light years away around Proxima Centauri. And 4 light years, if you're traveling, of course, I don't know if the speed of light is even relevant, but if you could travel at the speed of light, you could certainly make that trip in a lifetime between that planet and this planet, if that were possible. Now, according to Einstein, it's not, because you get all this time dilation stuff going on, and you have, increasing amounts of energy expended in order to reach those speeds and all that. But there's also theories about black holes and wormholes and, bending pieces of the universe to touch, you minimize the distance between places. You just pop through a point and you've arrived. And so that seems to be related to magnetic fields, black holes and things, and maybe, or wormholes, and maybe there's a way that they're generating these wormholes. Certainly there's speculation that some of this stuff is what's going on at CERN. There's the Large Hadron Collider and these explosions and not explosions, but collisions. They accelerate these particles to phenomenal speeds and then collide them. And what they're trying to do is generate mini Big Bangs and mini black holes. BP Earthwatch follows their feeds too, and they call it achieving luminescence. Let there be light, the Big Bang. It all kind of fits together. I think the Bible is actually the poetic way of looking at science. I don't think there's any disagreement between, the Bible and science. There's just the poetic way of looking at things and the mathematical way of looking at things, and I think both are necessary to inform the other. And I don't think there's any conflict between them at all. And even when you fit in time dilation, is it 6,000 years? Is it 6 billion years? It's a fascinating world out there. And if you want to join the conversation, Also, if you look at the site, madscientist.exposed, I have lined up some of these links here. I haven't lined them all up yet. Drudge, Matt Drudge, regularly features NASA news articles and UFO news articles. Incredibly, he's linked to articles that have had Secure Team 10 videos embedded in them and things. And so just a fascinating world out there. And I think there's more going on out there than just us. It's just a huge universe. And to think that we're the only living planet is too much for me to believe. I think the forces that made the universe, I would call them God, is bigger than that. Whereas I've talked to other people actually today who think, no, that we're extremely special and we're it for the whole universe. And I could see that point of view too. I held that point of view for a long time. So it's just one of those things. So if you'd like to join the conversation, the number here is, looks like it's a different number than we had last week. 319-527. Oh, that's the lo-fi connection. All right, 319-527-6208. And if you prefer a higher fi connection, the number is 347-324-3704. So, again, that's 347-324-3704. And the alternate number, if that one doesn't work, is 319-527-6208. And so it's just, I'm not sure exactly how that works with Blog Talk Radio providing alternate numbers. Anyway, let me take a quick break here, and then I'll take some calls. I see some are coming in.
You are listening to Freedomizer Radio, where freedomizers freedomize freedom.
You're an activist. You have a cause and an idea, but you also have lots of questions. You need help. After all, teams have coaches, corporations have consultants, and even politicians have campaign managers. But who do activists turn to? The Solutions Institute. We are a collection of professionals and activists from across the political spectrum. Our goal is to teach, motivate, and put all the necessary tools for activism in your hands without charge. Learn more or submit your project at solutions-institute.org.
Vaccines are required for students, employees, immigrants, military members, and international travel. Do you know how to legally avoid them? This is vaccine rights attorney and Freedomizer radio host Alan Phillips. My vaccine exemption ebook can help you avoid the mistakes that have cost others their exemption rights. Get the authoritative guide to vaccine legal exemptions, an ebook available at freedomizerradio.com and vaccinerights.com.
Let freedom ring throughout the land.
How would you like to make your work more enjoyable, be more creative and relaxed, all while sitting at your desk? That's exactly what my Serenity Rug has done for me. This revolutionary footrest, I can't even call it a footrest, because this thing encourages movement of your feet, which results in more blood flow. While traditional footrests advocate the motionless placement of your feet, I found that I'm unconsciously digging my feet into the long, soft grass strands of the Serenity Rug. It delivers an incredibly relaxing sensation that closely resembles the feeling of an exotic foot massage. If you have ever had a foot massage that made you want to stay there for hours, you know what I'm talking about. If you have not heard about the Serenity Rug, check them out at serenityrug.com and join the exclusive Serenity Rug community and enjoy a feeling of comfort and relaxation that most will never experience. They've sold out before, so I suggest you do your feet a favor and grab one of these. Again, that's serenityrug.com.
I am an autonomous government agent here to steal your livelihood.
Not so fast. I'm Sovereign Filing Solutions.
And I'm the Sovereign. We're teamed up.
To bring you
the truth without censorship.
Are you tired of being fed multi-million-dollar media lies?
Are you ready for the real story?
Sovereign Filing Solutions has teamed up with the Sovereign newspaper to make sure you get it.
And not the BS this guy behind me wants to feed you.
Take the step, help make the change.
Oh, come on, that's not even fair. How are we supposed to rule indiscriminately if you know what's going on?
Hi, so we're back, and let me take a call here. Hi, you're on the
Hello.
Air.
Hello.
Hi.
Oh, hi.
Is this Ed? Hi.
This is Ed calling in, yeah.
Hi.
Well, UFOs are near to my heart. I mean, I've been interested in them, you know, since I was a child. I think that the reason I got interested in them as a child was because I actually was in a UFO experience. I don't know exactly how to describe it. It was, if it was the first kind, the second kind, or the third kind, you know. But when I was about, I would say 9 years old, no more than 10 years old, I was at home alone with my mom one evening. My dad had these 12-hour shifts, and he was working the night shift, I guess. And I was in the living room. She was in the kitchen. And it was probably about 9 o'clock because it was totally dark outside. And all of a sudden, I heard something from the distance like, oh, and by the way, I should say, we were totally rural. We were in an orchard home that was about 80 years old. It had been built in the 1880s, and it was about 30 feet up off the ground because it was in a barn shape, typical barn shape type of thing, and we lived on one side of that had been made into a house. So we were the thing that was sticking up the tallest for probably at least a half a mile in any direction, probably more than that. And I remember when I was a kid, I'd climb up on the roof. I could see downtown San Jose in the distance and, you know, the Stanford Hoover Tower.
Well,
and stuff
quiet
like that.
There. You could probably see the stars really well out in the rural.
Oh, absolutely. In those days? Yeah, because this was in the late 1950s, and Silicon Valley had not yet really come about. There was maybe there was a few companies like Fairchild Semiconductor or something. I don't know. There was certainly IBM, but there wasn't, you know, all the Silicon Valley stuff. No computers for another 40 years.
Yeah.
So anyway, there was 9 o'clock at night, and I heard a distant noise that sounded like a kind of, I don't know how to describe it. I think the only thing I could possibly do is to try to recreate it for you. It was kind of a sort of sound. And it became louder and louder as I listened to it. Within like 10 seconds, it had gotten to like a very loud kind of
really
noise.
Loud.
And
it wasn't a wind
noise,
huh?
Staggered. Let me tell you, I was staggered. I think at first I was standing or sitting, and then I found myself on my knees on the carpet in the middle of the floor, and the sound was so bad that I put my head forward and put my hands over my ears and closed my eyes. It was so loud. The last thing that I remember seeing was that the wallpaper and everything around the room were changing to kind of a yellow color. Not yellow as the light was shining on it, but just everything sort of went kind of yellow. Never saw anything like that before. I think I passed out a little bit. I think I passed out.
It could be.
When I came back, I was on this, still on the carpet. My mom was still in the kitchen. I think she was sitting down. And the odd thing was, we never spoke about this. We never even said anything. I sort of went to my room, went to bed or whatever. Okay, the next day, or maybe it was the day after, my dad took me aside and he said, come out here. Come out here with me. He said, do you know anything
about
this?
No, he hadn't been home when it happened.
No,
he hadn't been home when it happened.
He was in the orchard. We were refugees from Europe, and he got a job for $1 an hour, you know, working in this orchard. We got the orchard home for free from the
So he was out working at night. He wasn't at the house.
He was working at night on a 12-hour shift in a place about a half mile away, another part of the orchard where they had the headquarters of the probably dehydrating prunes at that time of year. So anyway, so he gets outside, we look up, he points up towards the roof. Well, we had an antenna, a TV aerial, you know, kind of complex, you know, the old style Luma thing with our arms and things going off in several different directions.
Yeah.
And I looked and it was smushed. It was like crushed. It had been sort of just totally totaled and smushed down onto the top of the roof and one side roof. And he said, do you know anything about that? I said, no, I don't. He said, were you up on the roof? I said, no, because he knows that sometimes my friends might come over. I don't know if my friends ever went up on the roof to play or anything, because it was kind of difficult to get up there. literally the top of that roof was at least 30 feet off the ground, 35 feet off the ground. So I didn't put two and two together in my mind, and it didn't occur to me that to tell him the story of this weird noise that we had heard and of the, you know,
it wasn't a tornado or anything, was it?
It
wasn't
was
a tornado?
Nice, still, no. It was an absolutely still and warm, you know, maybe the summer. I think it might have been June or July or August because if Dad was working a 12-hour night shift, it might have been the prune dehydration which took place at that time of the year. So it was probably many years later, my mom and I were having a conversation. I said, you know, one night when I was a little boy, there was this weird noise, you know, it was like a kind of a noise. And she looked at me and she said, yes, I remember it, but we never talked about that, did we? We never spoke about that, did we, you know?
How
just
odd
very creepy,
that,
just a very creepy
that
thing
you'd both be moved to not talk about it, you know?
Well, I don't know. I think it might have been that we had some, maybe, you know, something like a post-hypnotic suggestion, a kind of like, you will forget about everything that you've seen here. You will forget everything that has been done to you, something like that. But then after maybe 30 years,
well, you're never able to recall whether you met anything.
Well, I didn't. I was out. That's like asking me what happened while I was under general anesthetic, you know.
Oh, wow.
And I don't know how much time lapsed either. Now, a few years later, I think my brother got me to join a book club. And one of the first books that I got was by Donald Kehoe, and it was called Flying Saucers Are Real. And he was a researcher on that. He had been a Marine pilot in the war and everything. And anyway, he was kind of like the father of ufology and stuff. And I remember vaguely, you know, reading his book, liking his book. I just loved anything on UFOs, you know, at the time. And I didn't know what to think. I really don't know what to think. So this is one incident that I have in a book that I've written, but I haven't published yet. It's called Strangest Adventures of Ed August. And it's about 290 pages long. Well, this is a very strange adventure. And,
you know, it's kind of odd. I watch these UFO things on YouTube. They're all about flying objects. They don't talk about actual meetings, you know, with aliens and stuff. And maybe I just haven't been watching that long, only a few months. But I don't see a whole lot of those. Mm-hmm. Maybe if I searched on them, all of a sudden I'd be inundated with, you know, suggested, you know, recommended YouTube videos that would pop up in my line. Because I haven't, you know, found any like that.
Sure.
But, you know, I did read the Communion book by Whitley Strieber when I was much younger. And I've blocked out most of the books. I forget how many there were even, but I know I read them all. But I really only remember the first one and maybe part of the last one. Yeah, Whitley Strieber's books and the Strieber or Strieber, I don't know. But his experiences were very terrifying. He was able to recall these things coming into his bedroom and all that kind of stuff. The conclusion of one of the books later was that the people who have these repeat visitors of aliens, they've also been somehow involved in a cult. And, whether it's communications with spirits, and then you start, I started making connections after a while that, you know, when, and, you know, the Matt Drudge has also had links to stories about possessions and exorcisms and stuff. And that's, from what I've read, a little bit I've read about that, the person involved, you know, getting possessed or whatever, they have to open the door first and grant at least a little bit of permission for these things to come in. And I think these are related, you know, what it's like, you know, the science uses math and the Bible uses poetry or whatever, but like, from one perspective, they're aliens from another planet, or they're interdimensional beings, and all this. And from, you know, a religious perspective, they're demons, or they're aliens, or they're demons or they're angels. And you know, there's good versus bad, and like, you know, like when you're using a Ouija board, you got to be really, you know, careful. I don't use Ouija boards anymore, but you don't know if you're inviting in something that's evil or something that's good. You're just like opening your front door and saying, okay, come on in, who's ever out there? And and so I don't mess with Ouija boards anymore after an experience when I was a kid. So, you know, I'm beginning to see that there's connections with these alternate planets and that there's connections with the spirit world and angels and demons, and I think we're dealing with more than one thing. And one thing that that it really occurred to me watching some of the Secure Team 10 things, you know, so many of them just look like stars flying in formation across the sky. You know, they'll be in a triangle, and the lights will change colors among themselves, or they'll swap positions and whatever, but they'll travel along together, or they'll just be one, and it'll travel for a while, and then it'll stop, and then it'll ascend into the sky, or go this way, or go that way, or whatever, and eventually disappear, or sometimes they'll just wink out. And I'm looking at these things, and I'm going, gee, that looks like what I think of as the Star of Bethlehem going ahead of the wise men and coming to rest over the prince of the universe where he was born. So, you know, like maybe the Star of Bethlehem was an angel. Now, I mean, if they're just flying around up there and they don't want us to see them, and, you know, I guess they only talk to you if you invite them, I guess. But why are they lit up? And there's probably a lot that aren't lit up. I've heard that if you get some heat glasses or whatever they are, you know, binoculars, heat sensitive, but and look in the sky, that you'll see a lot more stuff up there than you normally would see otherwise. But why do these things fly around with lights on? Why do they fly with lights on unless they want us to see them?
Exactly. Why are they flying with their lights on? It's like they want to.
Yeah, if they're being so secretive and they're not talking to us and all this stuff, and they're executing the Star Trek Prime Directive of non-interference, then why are they floating around up there with their lights on so we can see them? Anyway, that's just my question. But you know, there is a guy on YouTube that I forget what he's called, preacher so and so or pastor so and so, and he summons these things. And there was a Las Vegas TV station that didn't believe him. And he said, look, you name the time, you name the place, and I'll meet you there, and I will summon a UFO, and you can see for yourself. And so they did, and the video is out there. And he looked into the sky, and he spoke some words, come and talk to me now, or come visit us, whatever. And these UFOs, which had been at the TV station's time and place of choosing it, you know, these things came into view, and, you know, they were just dots in the sky, you know, and then reflective or whatever. It was daytime, but you could see them up in the sky. It looked very similar to some of the stuff that's coming out on Secure Team 10 now, including lights over Phoenix, lights over Florida, lights over Chicago and stuff. They all look very similar, just lights in the sky, and it's like this guy summoning them, which is kind of harkens back to, you know, if you let in the demons, they'll come in. If you let in these aliens into your bedroom, then they'll come in. So I don't want to talk to these things. I guess maybe I'm too old. I don't want to mess with it. The curiosity is not strong enough for me. I mean, yes, I would like to know what they are, but I don't want to meet one. I'm not that curious because I just don't want to deal with it. You know, the funny thing is, and I was really saddened by this. The Pope said if he ever met an alien, he'd be happy to baptize it. Like, what? right now, the only people that need baptizing are people. You know, we don't baptize cats and dogs. It's because, you know, human beings have the ability to choose between good and evil, which animals don't have that ability. And so we need that baptismal, you know, sacramental spiritual connection to God to say, yes, I'm choosing good. Even when I make mistakes, I want to be choosing good. And so that's, how the baptism is all. And you can't assume that an alien is going to have an evil streak and needs to make a choice between good and evil and that you can baptize them. And I thought it was pretty presumptuous of him to think he could baptize an alien or would need to baptize an alien or that an alien would want that.
Suzanne, think about good and evil with aliens, what about the fact that they would need to be told about Jesus? They would need to be told about the virtues,
well,
you know.
And how relevant
God
is that?
And
I mean, Jesus
and
came to
it,
earth
religion.
To be one of us. Jesus came to earth to be one of us and to save us and allow us to choose good even when we make mistakes and to be forgiven. And he came as a human being because that's the connection to us. He didn't come as a cat or a dog, and we don't know if he ever went to another planet. If he went to another planet, they would know about it over there. We don't need to tell them about it.
Could he have come from Proxima Centauri, from that Earth-like planet that's orbiting around Proxima Centauri or something, you know?
If he went there, if there are people there, I don't want to think that he's executed at each planet. But, but that's kind of a Mormon perspective, I think. I don't know that much about it, about Mormonism, but I do understand that they believe in peoples on different planets and Jesus going to different planets or themselves reaching out to different planets and different worlds.
That's
like all I know about Mormonism. It's connected to conventional Christianity, but that's about all I know.
But interesting how that blends together the things that you're talking about. It blends together the UFOs and the aliens, different planets, with the Christianity that you are talking about, you know.
Yeah, but
Jesus and God.
See, Christ came as a human being, as an earthly human being. If he went to another planet to interact with them, he would have gone as their species, I think.
Maybe so.
But then we're getting beyond the concept of the trilogy, a trinity, where you have the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit.
Uh-huh.
You know, then you'd have to have another son of another species on another planet, and that's beyond what I want to grasp with. You know, I just, I don't want to confine God, but it's like, okay, that's not relevant to me because I'm not of that species of whatever's on that planet.
Yeah.
You know, 4 light years away, I'm not of that species. Whether it can choose, whether they're capable of choosing between good and evil or not. So I have my qualms about, I don't know what these things are out there. I think there's a mixture of good and evil floating all around us. I think there's a spiritual realm. What they're saying is a lot of these UFO observations are increasing in frequency.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's this whole thing about, you know, watching the NASA feed from the ISS and you know, a couple of times Judge has linked to these, you know, with some unidentified shape, you know, that's just beyond the distance, just beyond where you can see it. You know, it's just kind of too fuzzy to tell exactly what it is. And then NASA quick cut the feed. And that's happened repeatedly to the point where even Matt Drudge will link to it. And so, I don't know. I think there's people that know what's going on. I don't know what the Pope knows. I mean, yes, there are even, Alex Jones says the Pope knows more than he's telling us.
Let me suggest that they're not evil. If they were evil, then sometime between the first UFO sightings in the night, about what was it, 1947, 48, you know, and now, they would have,
Plus they named a UFO. Before that, they might have just called it an angel or something. I'm sorry?
Well, yeah. And, you know, there are, Charles Fort, F-O-R-T, who documented lots of weird stuff from newspapers from the 1890s to maybe 1950 or so.
I haven't heard of him.
There are definitely. Oh, yeah, he had 4 books that he wrote, filled with this kind of stuff. And people who believe or who are interested in him and his theories, they're called Fortians, F-O-R-T-E-A-N-S, Fortians, and it's this Fortian society and whatnot. But anyway, cigar-shaped and flying saucer-shaped craft that have been known from the 1890s, the 1880s, you know, this was already happening then. And people disappearing.
Yeah,
when
was John Carter of Mars written?
Oh, probably
when was John Carter of Mars written?
1910s or 1920s. That was when Edgar Rice Burroughs was in his heyday. Edgar Rice Burroughs,
he's the same guy that was Tarzan,
right? Well, he's known the most for Tarzan, but he also did, the John Carter series, Thuvia Made of Mars, different
things. And that's even before Isaac Asimov and before,
Star Trek. Asimov would have read Edgar Rice Burroughs as a kid. That reminds me, I knew somebody when I was about 14 years old. He was a rich kid's son, and he had a shelf full on his dresser of first editions of all the Tarzan books from the 1910s and 20s with dust jackets, first editions. That would probably now be worth like at least $50,000 or $60,000. It's just a wonderful memory that I have of having at least seen those books, you know.
I've never seen anything.
The John Carter books. Yeah, they made some movies. I don't know if the movies were that good because I think that they weren't that popular. I don't think the John Carter thing was very popular in these recent films.
I tried listening to an audiobook one time as I was driving on the freeway, and I got several chapters into it. And it is kind of old-fashioned compared to science fiction of nowadays. But, you know, like you see on Star Wars and Star Trek, and all, you have a mixture of good and evil aliens. And I don't know, the late 1990s, early 2000s, I mean, I had to stop watching Star Trek because the aliens were getting uglier and uglier and more demonic looking. And I was just like, what are they trying to prepare us for? I just don't want to deal with this. I mean, I had little kids. So it was just, you know, but I love science fiction. I grew up reading Isaac Asimov and just the way he can just bend the laws of physics and have things happen. And his was more about human beings in the far distant future, so far in the future that they weren't even exactly sure where Earth was anymore. And so many thousands of years in the future, they had expanded out into the universe. And I should read them again. I don't remember. I don't think I remember Aliens in the Foundation series. I got to reread it now. I got to go reread it because now I need to know.
So this has to do with Earthlings, so to speak, that colonized Mars and whatnot, but not necessarily did they find
John Carter
aliens,
of Mars?
When you're talking about... No, talking about Isaac Asimov and some of his...
I don't remember anything about Mars with Isaac Asimov. I read, iRobot, and I read the Foundation series.
I must be thinking of a different one.
Isaac Asimov wrote a lot, and it wasn't possible for me to read it all.
At least 100 books. At least 100 books.
A lot were nonfiction. He was a very educated man, a very prolific writer. I should make it a goal to read all his books.
You know, like a book of chemistry that he wrote in the 19... A book about chemistry or astronomy that he wrote in the 1950s might be worth 100 bucks now because people are trying to get complete collections of his original books.
I know some of the stuff is in reprint. You know, you find the Foundation trilogy in Barnes and Noble, stuff like that.
You know, one of those beautiful bindings, one of those nice bound books.
Yes, I like those.
$20.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, those are nice.
So I was gonna pull up some of the NASA research stuff that we've got going on here, too. Because, I mean, we're going out. It's not just aliens out there. We're out there with manned and unmanned stuff. So,
interesting.
What?
Oh, no.
I was looking at some things. May. What thing?
Well, there's a NASA scientist who also worked at or is working still at Lockheed Martin, you know, and you know Lockheed Martin, I guess. Anyway,
he's
claiming for 20 years. Well, no, I think I knew somebody who used to work there. But anyway, for about 20 years, he's been talking about these giant UFOs that are on Saturn's rings, and he claims that they're like life forms rather than ships, and that they're like eating or somehow getting energy from the rings, and they're proliferating. They're expanding, they're proliferating. They're going to other planets. You know, they prefer the ones that have rings, like Jupiter has a ring, and planet Uranus has a ring. Maybe Neptune has a ring.
Yeah, you know what that sounds like? That sounds like an episode of Star Trek Continues that I saw recently. That's like a fanzine series, Star Trek Continues, where they have Captain Kirk and McCoy and but it's with actors that are Star Trek fans from the 60s, and the guy that plays Captain Kirk is actually, he does a lot of voiceovers for a lot of Japanese anime cartoons. My kids knew him from Full Metal Alchemist and stuff like that, but they had their most recent episode that I've seen was about these asteroid rocks that kind of it lived in an asteroid belt, but they were living things, and they got all involved there was the mama asteroid and the baby asteroid. And the baby asteroid ran away, and it took them a while to figure out they were dealing with life forms. You know, the baby asteroid ended up on the starship on the Enterprise. So it was kind of I thought it was a goofy episode, but now I'm seeing where they got it.
You wonder where they got it from. They got it from real stuff.
You're telling me that there's a real NASA scientist who believes that there are living asteroids out there, in a ring around Saturn. Then that might be where they got it. And I thought it was just the goofiest episode I'd ever seen. And so wow.
You could Google. I can't find it right at the moment. It was right here, and I saw it on two different websites. The same stuff about the guy who says that there are these giant UFO creatures actually that are on the what look to be very smooth, rings. You know, I mean, you don't see any real features anywhere really on the rings around Saturn. So I don't know where he's seeing these. If there are any photographs. Hey, here's a story that might be even more interesting. This is the Express out of the United Kingdom. Second UFO researcher dies, fueling claims of men in black murder spree. A second UFO researcher has been found dead this month, fueling a conspiracy theory that they are being killed.
Yes, that's one of the links
I've
got. That's one of the links I've got. If you want to follow somebody, well, I kind of preload the show with some links, and that's one of them. And read some of that to us.
I was just noticing that one of these paranormal investigators who once claimed he was part of a secret government super soldier project, he was dead. He was found dead in Poland this month, and no cause of death is being given. And the other one died in India under apparently mysterious circumstances, but it's being treated as a suicide by the authorities. So that's really weird. Poland and India, I guess these people were traveling when this happened. It says,
So this is the headline, July 21st, UFO researcher death, fuel murder spree conspiracy. And that's kind of like the holistic doctors that are being killed off around the country.
I don't know much about that. It's over 20. If you ask me, there's no sensible reason why something like that should happen. Who would be going around killing off naturopathic doctors? I mean, could it be possible?
Well, come on,
that
the people that will lose money if people learn how to heal themselves. If some horrible disease they have is really nothing but a nutrient deficiency, and they learn what to eat to heal themselves, there's a lot of money that goes down the tubes for these pharmaceuticals. There is a struggle between. Between natural health and artificial health.
Anything that points out that the emperor has no clothes, right, and that people don't really need to subject themselves all this medical establishment are a threat to the establishment.
So that's what's going on. A woman named Erin Elizabeth is covering these things on healthnetnews.com, all these naturalistic doctors that are coming up, they're being suicided, most of them. The one guy shot himself twice in the head, or shot himself twice in the chest and threw himself off a bridge into a river, and that was supposed to be a suicide.
The question is, crazy, coroner or sheriff rated that was a suicide, and who paid
people
the
people that fear for their lives. People that fear for their lives. They figure, I can't help this guy, he's dead, so I'm going to save myself. That's what's going on, I think.
You
know,
20 years later, it'll come out in their memoirs or something. I mean, the truth will come out eventually. If anybody's being forced to be quiet about something, sooner or later they're going to blab about it.
Some of these people, they've heard, what do they call it, a dead man trigger or something like that, where they'll spread copies of their research around with trusted associates, and then if they get quote unquote suicided, all this stuff comes out. And I think actually Roger Stone who's a personal friend of Trump has some of this stuff, you know, stashed around. So, you know, because, you know, there was Julian Assange of WikiLeaks. His lawyer was murdered last week, and there was a break-in attempt at the Ecuadorian embassy in London where Julian Assange is staying. There was a break-in attempt there, I think it was yesterday, the day before. And, you know, they're terrified that he's going to get murdered because of, you know, WikiLeaks has more to leak as far as the Democratic National
Party. This is the Ecuadorian embassy, right, or whichever it was, I think. Is it Ecuador?
Yeah, the Ecuadorian embassy in London where he is. He's holed up there because Sweden has some kind of a sexual assault charge ginned up against him. They want to extradite him, and he's taken asylum in there in order to not get extradited because
there's a claim that
I don't know. It just doesn't fit his personality pattern to be an assault predator. But so I, you know, I have my doubts about why they're trying to extradite him. But you know, they're trying to get him out of that. Yeah. You know, certainly.
Well, sure.
That wasn't one of the headlines today, that Google is suppressing the search. If you search on Clinton body count, that they're suppressing the results. So you got to find another search engine if you want to find that.
Oh, my goodness.
The Clinton body count.
Yeah, I
mean,
try DuckDuckGo. That's a good search engine.
Yeah. But I'm just a lawyer. He was accidentally fell under a train in London. Accidentally fell under a train.
Yeah.
Like, nobody bumped him off the platform or anything like that. I mean, how would they know if it's an accident or a suicide or a murder? How can they make a ruling like that? But then right after his lawyer's murdered, then somebody tries to get at him. And it's totally scary because these, you know, people are taking their lives in their hands to give us the truth. You know, and so the second UFO researcher, here's a headline, second UFO researcher dies, fueling claims of Men in Black murder spree. A second UFO researcher has been found dead this month, fueling a conspiracy theory that they are being killed off by government secret agents to prevent the truth from getting out there. Well, you know what? People have eyes.
Yeah.
The truth is out there. And Max Spears, a paranormal investigator who had claimed he was once part of a secret government super soldier project, was found. Yeah, this is the same article you were telling me. He was found dead in Poland this month.
Yeah.
YouTube speculators are convinced he was murdered, despite no official cause of death being given yet. On Wednesday, express.co.uk reported on the death of fellow UFO researcher Gaurav Tiwari, who was found dead in India under apparently mysterious, quote-unquote, circumstances. However, it is being treated as a suicide by authorities. Conspiracy theorists have been convinced that UFO chasers who get too close to the truth are bumped off by secret services or so-called men in black. And this goes on.
What is really going on with these UFOs or linkages between UFOs?
If you're
not
willing to summon them,
or a secret
maybe
government.
They'll come tell you. If you're willing to summon them, maybe they'll come tell you. But I don't want any part of that. I'm content to wait. You know, because I don't know what the hell is out there.
If
humanity is going to step up and take its place in the universe, then we need to do it boldly. But I maybe I'm too old. Maybe I don't know what it is about me. I don't want to meet these people because, as I understand it, at least from Whitley Strieber's books and some of these other abduction encounters that I've read about and stuff, you know, I don't want this abduction stuff. I don't know if I'm going to meet somebody good or evil or how to sort them out. But also, they instill huge fear. I mean, people wake up with these horrible memories of being absolutely terrorized, or Whitley Strieber woke up and remembered his father screaming in absolute terror. You know, it's like, I don't want to deal with that. I don't know how to force only the good ones to come to me, you know?
I think the Whitley Strieber is very shaky. I think I'm rather skeptical about Whitley Strieber.
Why?
I read enough of him that I just don't know. And he was... I think I definitely saw or heard. I mean, I heard a piece about him on one of these late night, you know, those all night coast to coast shows and everything. I just wasn't convinced about Strieber. Seeing him after reading part of him or something like that, I think that he was a writer who suddenly realized that if he put himself into the middle of one of these with an actual, I think he was a writer of horror and different types of maybe some sci-fi and stuff like that, who suddenly realized that to get really popular, to get really well known, what he needed to do was put himself in the middle of this by claiming that he had had this kind of paranormal experience, you know, and I just don't totally buy it. You know what I did? I'd probably review it. I'd probably go through it again and look at all this stuff. How long ago
did you last hear about this?
It's been at least 10 years, hasn't it, since we've heard
I heard his name came up like a year or so ago. He was on, I think he was on Coast to Coast or something. I don't know. He's still around.
Does he claim that they're still contacting him?
No, I think he managed to cut it off. I think he managed to cut it off and save his life because I think they were starting to involve his son. And when things started involving your children, that's when you say enough.
Involving the kids, sure.
Yeah.
Multi-generational contacts, you know, with alien forces.
Yeah, no, his father and himself. And then it was going into the third generation, and I think he found a way to cut it off, and I think you just say no.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of like this poor woman on Facebook with the vaccine thing, you know, some people, they can't find it within themselves to say no when they're being abused or confronted or something. I don't, there's a lot about, you know, human personality that I don't understand. Why do some people stand up and fight and some people will just lay down and let you walk on them? I don't understand why. There's probably a lot of the same dynamic. If these things are intelligent, if they are, if they can choose between good and evil, if like humanity, the theory is that we're made in the image of God, you know, and I think that means that we can choose between good and evil and we should choose good.
We sure should.
We'll probably find a similar mixture out in the universe as we find here on Earth. You know, right now the Earth's pretty messed up, and I think the more evil things we see going on in the world, like weaponized vaccines and stuff, you know, I think the more we're seeing these lights, and I think, you know, there's a lot of people think, you know, the biblical prophecies are lining up and Jesus is coming back, and and so maybe some of these are like the precursor angels floating around. I don't know, you know, and I suppose I should ask. Angels only come to me. Nobody. I don't know.
For some reason, I feel compelled to mention a favorite author called Ivan T. Sanderson, and he wrote a book maybe back in the 70s now. It's called Invisible Residents. Invisible Residents, and it's a theory. It's the reality and proof that there is UFOs or similar. You know, creatures or crafts that are under our oceans in all that space that we have idea what's down there. He believes, he gives, I think, probably 100 references or more of sightings of, for example, UFOs that were seen by many people in ships, you know, as they were like either rising out of the water.
I think Victor Keen 10 has a new video like yesterday or today about ships, you know, hiding in the ocean, underwater bases and things that you know.
Well, sure.
He's just got so many videos out there. I haven't seen them all yet. And wouldn't be surprising.
Every day.
That'd
but
be an
know,
easy place
I,
to hide is under the water.
At the same time as, you know, there's these videos are proliferating, and I'm so reluctant to hold belief to these videos because you know and I know that it would be almost the easiest thing in the world for somebody to throw a frisbee, up into the air or something. And
right,
get,
you have
you
to
know,
believe your
those.
Eyes. And so that's what I mentioned when I opened today, and I don't know if you heard the very beginning of the show, but I was saying, you know, there's a variety of these UFO researcher channels on YouTube. And the one guy, you know, I watched a couple of days, and I'm like, these are just Mylar balloons. This is ridiculous. And I unsubscribed and I got rid of him, and I think I hit dislike on so many of them, they don't even offer me his stuff anymore to see. I mean, I can watch all the Secure Team 10s I want, and I don't get any from this guy as suggested, you know, further viewing. Because it's just Mylar balloons of various shapes.
I didn't understand what it was. But I didn't understand. What was it that you didn't like about it, or why don't you get it anymore?
Because it was so blatantly obvious. I mean, you have to look with your eyes. And kind of part of what's going on, you know, certainly with the NASA feeds from the ISS, when a UFO floats into view of an International Space Station external camera, it's always just distant enough that you can't tell what it is. You can't tell the exact shape or what. Mm. And so they're keeping themselves at a distance. So this guy had just close-up pictures of Mylar balloons, and, you know, just ridiculous.
Now, Mellow Blues,
I don't know. For all I know, these, you know, there's people that say, oh, they're walking among us in disguise. They look like people, and maybe they're running websites. I don't know.
Maybe they're walk-ins. In other words, alien comes along and infests or invades or takes over or implants something into the body of a human being. He's able to walk through life as a human being and see things the way a human being does. You know, maybe
why do you think it would be an implant?
Well, just whatever it would take for him to use a human being that way. And it would be one of the reasons why maybe people
that would be like a possession. Oh, I didn't even think of that.
Sure.
I didn't even think of that. Like a possession, like Avatar, where he was in disguise as one of their,
maybe it was the UFO thing, you know. Maybe it was, possessed by spirit. What do you mean possessed by spirit? Maybe it's a spirit from a different planet, you know. doesn't have to be an infernal spirit or demonic spirit or something.
I don't want these things messing with my brain, controlling what I see and I hear. I don't want this stuff, you know.
You need to change the subject.
It's like, you can go to Etsy and get the most beautiful tinfoil hats. You know? Etsy.com, you know, these handcrafted knitted, but it's spun tinfoil and just these, you know, beautiful tinfoil hats and, you know.
That is funny. So have you ever seen anything that remotely could have been a UFO yourself?
Yeah, when I was a kid, I saw a few in the Hudson Valley. But, you know, they were up in the sky. I've never met one in person. I just saw them in the distance, and after, you know, so far back, you
was
know,
it one,
several
was
decades
it just
ago.
One UFO or was it just
no,
one
a couple
UFO?
Different. No, well, there was one that was
you,
like kind of like shaped like a J hook. It was like over the the ice cream shop in. We drove up to Hyde Park. There was this great ice cream shop. I think it was I don't remember the name of the ice cream shop. But anyway, it was great.
Are you sure
the best
you
ice cream I've ever had.
Cream? Are you sure you didn't have too much ice cream and maybe you had too much ice cream and you started having visions? No.
We all saw it. The whole family saw it. We're standing in the parking lot eating our ice cream. We're looking out over this field in on the east side of the Hudson River from Woodstock. You know, just looking out over this field, you know, with trees and grass and stuff, and this thing hanging in the sky, and it was just kind of like the shape of a J, and it just kind of hung there, you know, like a big fish hook in the sky, and you know, I stayed there for a while, and then I don't remember. We went home, and that was the end of it. But, you know, when I was super, super little, I remember something coming up the street that was only at the treetops.
Yeah. Did you ever talk about it at school? Did you ever talk about it again with your family?
No.
Or was it sort of like forgotten?
No, because we didn't know what it was. It's like, what the heck was that? You know, and that's about it. That's all we could say.
And these days, people have their cameras and their phones. But these days, there are tons of pictures that are being made. People can actually make photos
now. No, back then,
couldn't do that.
I might have been old enough. I remember I got a 126 Instamatic camera for my 11th birthday, something like that. Mm. And it was film. It was better film than, it was comparably good with 35 millimeter. It was 126. But anyway, I didn't have it with me, and it. I don't know.
That
would have
been great.
I don't know. We weren't carrying our cameras everywhere in those days because film is expensive and developing is expensive. Now, digital cameras, now there's this whole proliferation of just this outpouring of, you know, everything human beings can see. They're photographing and putting it out there so we can find it and all share our information. And this it's kind of overwhelming, the information overload that we have, but it's all the stuff we ever wondered about, you know? So.
Yeah. And it's happening. It's out there. All you have to do is search for it, Google it up or whatever.
I was on a forum one time and somebody said, when is the government going to issue disclosure? And even Secure Team has on its logo today. He goes, disclosure is coming soon. And I'm like, who needs disclosure? the government lies to me all the time. Anyway, why would I turn to the government for disclosure of, you know, okay, we confirm that UFOs are real. You know, I'm like, I don't need the government to tell me. I just need to look at what other people are seeing because all the government is other people anyway. Why do I have to battle an authority figure to tell me what I'm seeing? I don't. So I was like, I think there's something out there, and I don't want it to bother me. And I have put the mental vibes out there. I sprinkled the holy water. I don't want these things coming near me or my family. So, because I don't know what they are.
You really take this personally. You're really affected by it, you know. Well, maybe that UFO that you saw that looked like Jay was not anything bad. Maybe it had to do with aliens that wanted to reassure you. Maybe the Jay stood for Jesus, you know, and maybe they were friendly.
Why do we think that we're so different from the rest of the universe? You know, yes, if there's other intelligent life out there, they probably will have developed a spiritual capacity, but I don't know. They could just be like smart dogs and cats. I mean, whales and dolphins are very intelligent, but we don't think of them as being able to choose good versus evil. They're just dolphins and whales, and they're perfect in their environment. Yeah. They don't come out and build cities or they're happy together. And I need to take one more break here before the end of the show. Yeah. So give me a minute. I hit play and I don't hear it. There it is.
Radio Network. This live show is brought to you by the Wonder Mill Company located in Pocatello, Idaho. Wonder Mill produces the world's number one rated electric grain mill and the world's best and fastest manual hand grinders. The only company in the world with both types of grain mills. Wonder Mill products just make better flour. Wonder Mill products increase your baking and menu selections and help make all of your food more delightful. The company's newest kitchen appliance is the highly acclaimed Wonder Mix Kitchen Mixer and Blender. This combination appliance will help you create tasty recipes and healthier meals with fresh, home-grown flour. Preparedness Radio's presentation of self-reliance, survival, and homesteading information will help you develop your family's distinctive preparedness lifestyle. Listen now to your show hosts and their guests on Preparedness Radio.
Are you one of the tens of people who are tired of seeing chemtrails? Fed up with the government geoengineering you every other day? Take a dose of La Mecha Wong Chemtrail Remover daily and you'll never worry about weather modification again. With great ingredients and quality vitamins from Mexico and China, like fluoride, barium, high fructose corn syrup, and colloidal mercury, your brain will be a virtual Etch-A-Sketch lickety-split La Mecha Wong Chemtrail Remover. Wow, I don't even remember the tagline for this, so it must be great. From the people that brought you the roller coaster making game and who brought you the FEMA coloring books, it's the FEMA Camp Tycoon. That sounds cool! Here, you will have over 800 concentration camps to choose from. Wow! You want Vegas? 29 Palms? Jacksonville? Start with Beech Grove, Indiana, and it's all yours. You'll learn how to get people on the red, the blue, and the yellow list. I want to be red. I want to be blue. Buy more trains. Get HR 645 passed. But don't pay the Senate too much money. You'll need to buy gas chambers with that. Collect barcode readers, sell souvenirs,
I think I had enough of that
Be sick of being a chump, lied to by politicians and businessmen alike, watching as the world slowly burns, as trillions of debts racked up under your grandchildren's names. Hi, I'm Ben Lucifer Bernanke Cochran. I'm asking that you tune into my weekly radio show, The Patriot Power Hour with Lucifer Bernanke, each Thursday night at 6 p.m. Eastern on Freedomizer Radio. Look, I'm not trying to sell you anything here. I just need your help fighting these banks just scum. The sick fans, behind all the wars, the failed healthcare system, I mean, they own all the mega banks, all the mega corporations. They own the media, of course. They've already conquered most of humanity, really. And their juiciest final target. Well, we're next. America's next. So I'm not going out without a fight. So join me Thursday as I use my background in finance and risk management to decode breaking news and developments, all while helping to prepare you and your family for future waves of financial terrorism that are sure to come. Thursday nights, 6 p.m. Eastern, only on FreedomizerRadio.com.
Wow.
Hey, Freedomist, join me, Proof Negative. Weeknights, 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern, 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. Pacific, as we fight the New World Order together. Right here on Freedomizer Radio, your exclusive home of the Proof Negative Show.
Huh. Yeah, you know, some of these say spoof on them, and that one just got too much for me. I bailed out of it. But,
yeah, that was
you
weird.
Know, last night, that some of them, I mean, they're done for a laugh, but, you know, it was that one was too much for me, and I was like, no. Anyway, so last night Alex Jones was talking about some of these New World Order elites at the top, and quite often I'll, I kind of think of them instead of just calling them elites, I call them predator elites because they are weaponizing the vaccine.
Mm-hmm.
There's no need for the SIDS rate that we've got. You know, the USA has the highest number of vaccinated babies and the highest infant mortality rate in the world. That's insane. That's absolutely insane. And all you got to do is look at it and you realize they know this is going on and they keep doing it anyway. So that tells you it's intentional. So anyway, he was talking about these predator elites that some of them are, and this is something I had thought of myself, and he says it too, that these that want to run your life and run you into the ground and cripple your children so they never have their own children or you know, kill your children just for sport. They're doing it for sport. It's not just for the money of selling vaccines. They actually enjoy killing people. And anyway, some of these people are actually in contact with, you know, Satan and Satan's demons. And, you know, and just last week was the bizarre thing of this mock human sacrifice outside the CERN Large Hadron Collider in Switzerland. You know, they're supposed to be nuclear physicists, you know, officially atheists, all stuff. Well, what the heck are they doing pretending to have a human sacrifice? So CERN is going to investigate and get to the bottom of it, but I doubt they'll ever issue a statement. But anyway, that's what's going on. That what they want to hide from us is, you know, they have communication with these super evil, ultra-dimensional beings, you know, which I would call Satan and demons, and somebody else would call an interdimensional being. And I think they want to hide from us that there are ultra-good dimensional beings out there. There's the good ones, which I would call angels. And I think that's what this is all about, all the secrecy is about, and why they're murdering the guys that are UFO researchers and all this, is because they'll spill the beans that we can be, you know, individually in communication with the ultra evil and the ultra good. And the ultra good always trumps the ultra evil. There's no way to commit as much evil as they want to commit, you know. And, you know, but they're out. They're doing damage to the Earth with, you know, their magnetic pulses that they're sending out to the sun and causing this coronal mass ejections to come back and hit our atmosphere and like a balloon and cause these earthquakes and things. It's just,
that is just unbelievable to me. That is just absolutely unbelievable.
Why?
Really? They're doing that at CERN. That they're toying with the magnetosphere, with the Van Allen belt. You know, that something that they're doing is actually reaching out all the way to the sun.
But you've seen some of these deep Earth watches too, right?
Yes,
you've
I
seen
have.
Some of these deep
yes.
Earth watches too, and he's just all he's doing is drawing from a diverse range of scientific feeds from different websites.
Why
you
are
know,
they being financed
data.
By all these governments, Suzanne? Why are they still being financed? They've done their particle physics. They've found the so-called God particle, right? They found these little mini.
No, they haven't found them all. They haven't found. In fact, just this week, supposedly this major announcement. There's been a fifth. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Until you can create your own universe.
This is an open-ended thing that can go on for 100 years. It's going to self-perpetuate itself. They're going to keep coming up with reasons why they need to keep doing this.
The truth about science is every question that gets answered generates a ton more questions. So you're busy forever. And
they're being paid a lot of money to do work that may not be even necessary,
maybe.
And it may be toying with life on Earth.
I looked up the CERN Hadron Collider, It appears to me, unless I missed something, but I did some research as to who's funding this thing. It's a bunch of countries, but not the U.S. The U.S. So we can't even ask Congress to defund what's going on over there. You know, the mini black holes and the mini big bangs and the mock human sacrifices on the front lawn.
What are the stupid countries that got talked into, that got roped into funding CERN? Who the hell are they anyway? Do you have to
come up with one of these countries? Just Google who's funding CERN and you get a list.
Yeah.
So I kind of made a sarcastic. I made a sarcastic one of my posts recently, like a week or two ago, about the real cause of climate change, because they are there with all this magnetic stuff and not being able to deflect solar wind as efficiently as we're supposed to be able to with our magnetic field, because they're damaging our magnetic field. You know, that's like the real cause of global warming. It's not you and me driving, carbon emitting cars. It's not you and me exhaling carbon dioxide. It has nothing to do with carbon dioxide. It has to do with the magnetic field and the solar radiation that we can't, solar wind. Yeah. So I had in the article, I said, well, we're not even funding them, so we can't have Congress defund them. But, you know, I guess we'll have to bomb them. Now that's sarcasm.
Sure.
That's the only way I think we could put an end to what's going on at CERN. You know, we can't just say, pretty please stop doing your science, because that's politically incorrect. You know, but every science can be weaponized, and that's what they're doing. You know, you can't just say all science is good. And that's, you know, the slogan of the site here is, of course we trust science. It's scientists we don't trust, you know, because they'll learn both sides of the equation, and they'll weaponize. Boy, the power thrill of being able to grab onto the weaponized side of a particular science that you're studying, you know, why don't they just do something good with it? You would think there would be more thrill in that. But something Alex Jones said on his show last night, he said his father, you know, when he was a little kid, you know, he was a happy-go-lucky kid, and, you know, good natured and all this stuff. And his father told him, look, there are people out there that would rather screw you out of 5 cents then work together with you and make $100. He doesn't understand it. There are some people out there, something corrupt in human nature, that there are people that will do that. They would rather kill your baby with a vaccine than actually make your baby healthy and have it grow up and be beautiful and, you know, and enrich the world with art and beauty and knowledge and love. You know, they would rather see grieving parents than do that. And it's for sport. It's a power thrill. I'm running off, but I'm just kind of ranting. But, you know, I think it's going to be hard to come to grips with all these alien life forms, non-human life forms, when we haven't come to grips with human nature, and that's what all the religions are about. So I don't know. So am I blowing you away there?
If a month goes by and there aren't any UFO reports and there's no visitors from other planets, it may be that suddenly everybody's staying away because of what they're doing at CERN, or what they may think it might be coming up, that we're messing with the magnetic field.
Oh, they're immune
stuff,
to all that stuff. They're out in space. What do they care if the Earth collapses? But if they are good and loving, they're concerned.
They don't want to be here if it gets... If something really bad happens, they don't want to be here and get caught in the mess.
A war going on out in space, too, between the good and the evil ones. You know, the good ones that see the beauty of the Earth, they're going to want to, you know, keep away the evil influences. I think the universe is just a mixture of influences, just like here.
It's a very strange planet. I did a book called Strange and Unusual World, Correspondence on the Occult and Bizarre, and that's available out there under my name, Ed August. You know, the weirdest thing I saw in the early 1990s, I was in my parents' house in the backyard, and it was night, and there was a lounge chair, whatever you want to call it, and I lay down on this thing, and I turned out all the light. For some crazy reason, I just wanted to kind of rest there and look at the stars. Yeah, maybe there was one of the Perseid showers, Leonid shower, I don't know what it was. This is when I still had really good eyes. I had really good eyesight back then. And I was looking way up.
Well, you do
know
again,
what
as I understand
saw?
It.
Do you know what I saw? I saw, you know what a flight of birds, a lead bird and then tapering back into a, well, it was a flotilla of lights that was moving very slowly but steadily across the sky at a huge altitude. And it was nighttime. Now, why were they lit? They must have been lit because the sun was still visible from however high up they were above the earth. And it was absolutely floored me. And I looked at this. You know, I didn't have binoculars, I didn't have a telescope, I didn't have a camera on hand. I mean, I could have definitely taken a picture, but I saw it. I saw this thing, and I'm just thinking there are a lot of UFO sightings. We're not even hearing about all the UFO sightings. Not everybody that sees a UFO talks about it. I never said anything.
Or even photographed it. Yeah.
But I mean, but it was so far away that the whole at arm's length. It was much, 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 much smaller than the tip of my finger at my arm's length. It was like, it took up like 1 second of longitude in the sky. Oh, it must have been, you know, 10,000 miles.
Yeah.
I mean, very high.
There was one up on one of these channels that was kind of like that. It was just a string of lights just kind of like floating over Phoenix, I think it was.
The Phoenix lights,
floating in or traveling in formation.
It's like a line of them.
And
yeah,
a line of them. And I, you know, I gotta say, you know, yes, there are people that make fake videos. There are people that will do hoaxes. And I saw when I was in Tucson one time, I saw a couple of lights like rise up from behind the Catalina Mountains and slowly drift south.
Yeah.
And I stared at them like, what is that? What is that? What is that? And it just occurred to me. Somebody, and it was right at sunset, you know, it was just dark, and now these things are bright lights rising and floating. And it occurred to me that these were flares. These were flares floating
flares?
Under balloons. I could, but it was too dark to see the balloons that were holding them up. And I could see where somebody might tie them together, you know, so that there's some distance between them so that they appear to be traveling in formation. And so you only really know if it's. Yeah, so floating on the wind.
But what about the Phoenix lights? Because they were seen more than one night. They were seen repeatedly. And it was like a line of them. It was like a line of them above the horizon somewhere. I think we could conjure that up. I think we'd look on Google and see Phoenix lights, and that would be the first thing that would pop up.
Oh, yeah, I think you'll see a security team also. Sometimes there are people out there that will do hoaxes. And I think the more people have drones, I think we're going to see some drone hoaxes too, and which is a shame. I think there is something going on out there and just being able to distinguish, you know, maybe I'll know in my lifetime, maybe I won't. You know, I'm not going to wait for the government to disclose me. It's like there's something going on and I know it. They don't need to tell me that. And I don't know that I want to meet these things. What?
Hey, could somebody take a drone and dress it up like to look like a dragon or a giant dragonfly or something like that?
Well, that is pretty obvious. It's a hoax.
That would scare people. Like, would it really be? I don't know. Depends on how realistic it looked like. You know, they put a neck on there with big eyeballs and antennas and stuff and a tail on it.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I knew that I was going to get far-ranging on this episode, so I do know people that actually work in unmanned space, programs and, you know, designing instruments and stuff. And I don't know. I've asked them once before, you know, do you think that there's something to this? And they laughed me off. You know, there's this two people, they intersect on the OSIRIS project, but the one guy's designing probes for Mercury, Mars, you know, different planets and stuff. So I don't know. Maybe I'll send them the replay of this show and see what they think. But
you get a comment.
Yeah.
That's a great idea.
Maybe someday in the future they might consider joining us on the show. But you know, these are cold sober people, and I don't know that they wander in these mental excursions that I do, just trying to identify where these are and seeing where they overlap, you know, demonic and angelic activity versus UFO activity, I see some overlap. And so there's something spiritual going on. And I got to apologize, but I am running out of time. I'm running out of time here. And so I'm going to have to just thank everybody. And thank you, Ed, for calling, because you always add something fun to the show.
Thank you so
but
much.
I want to thank everybody for tuning in. So